Continuing the interview with Mrs. Honeysickle, this is tape 3, side 1. Yes, you wanted to insert something after the fish cleaning job.
Yeah, in Sweden. Before I went to nursing school in Norrköping, I went to work in a nursing home, which was sponsored by, I think, the Jewish agency, which were like the Danish people who escaped to Sweden, who were elderly and ill, and was sort of like a stopover for them, and I worked there. And at that time, the invasion of Normandy took place.
I see.
And I remember buying myself a big chocolate bar and giving all the patients big chocolate bars, because I think that was the greatest thing that has happened in all these years.
Yes.
And from then on, I really was hoping, thinking maybe the war is going to be over in a week, in a day, and hoping that starting to get some kind of information from home, which didn't happen. And when the nursing home then was, in the nursing home, I started to apply to nursing schools. Okay, so I just wanted to say that because the invasion of Normandy took place at that time.
Very important, yeah. Memorable date. And so you had said earlier that, was it late 44, you began making inquiries of the Czech government in exile to try to find some Czech families in Sweden?
Yeah, Czech families in Sweden, on the whole, because they also had a lot of contact with the British and so on. And as I said before, the young men, the Chavarim now, they were 18 or 19, they started enlisted into the British army. And that I found out through the Czech embassy in exile at that time. And at the time I was trying to get in touch with the Chavarim, but they were scattered all over. The boys were in England. Some of the girls went with them because the romance is starting to blossom out that time. And however, I was stuck way up there in the north of Sweden and not having money to take a train or a bus or anything like that. I just stuck it out.
You were out of touch then.
I was completely, completely out of touch until 1972. Believe that.
My, oh my.
Yeah, out of that. Anyhow, so, all right. So from Norrköping, I went to another hospital with the same agreement. And that was in Södertälje, which was an hour away from Stockholm. And then I got sick. I got a ruptured appendix. And so I was quite ill there. And the thing was the same thing. It was...
You still hadn't gotten a nursing certificate?
No.
Same thing.
Semester was over. And I got a job, and now I really wanted money.
Of course.
I wanted some kind of money. And also, every hospital had a different uniform, so you had to... So I decided to go and work for money, and I went to an insane asylum to work, which was near Uppsala. And Uppsala is the old university, which is here, they call it Uppsala.
Yes.
But it's Uppsala. And it was called Ulleråkers. Ulleråkers Hospital. And that was like 20 miles out of Uppsala. There was a big insane asylum there. And I worked in the... Well, they stuck me right away into the very, very...
Violent
ward.
Yeah. Oh, my dear.
But I got paid.
This was 1945 by then?
That's 44, 45.
Still 44.
44, 45. I was there.
How did you handle them?
Were they difficulty.
Giving, were they giving them, they weren't giving drugs yet, were they?
No, but they were getting shock treatment.
Shock treatment. My.
So I worked there and I celebrated my 20th birthday there.
All alone still?
Yeah.
How long did
and
you
at
stay?
The time I started being in Sweden and being in a country which is what we said before, a sexual revelation for me. I started thinking, I'm 20 and I still know nothing as far as sexual life is concerned. But I really wouldn't even say I wasn't interested in men. It just...
No opportunity.
There was no opportunity. There was no... Maybe not a need. There was not a...
And you were out of your milieu.
Yeah. It wasn't
your
nothing.
Old friends.
But I remember my 20th birthday when I thought, my gosh, you know, I don't even know...
A young man.
A young man. I never had it. Well, I had a romance when I was 14. And I started thinking about myself a little more than a machine who works, and maybe starting thinking about myself about a young woman who maybe my needs started to coming out, having some kind of a close relationship. But it didn't come about, and I think that too passed. But I really do remember when I was 20, I was starting thinking a little, you know, what's going to be as far as me, my femininity is concerned.
Did you have any days off at this institution, and how could you spend them if you knew so
few
people?
I had a bicycle, and I would go to the Uppsala University. And so I go to the Uppsala University, and I find out that one of the Haverim is a student there.
I see.
Whose name is now... His name was Hardy Berger. His name is Dania Alon, whom I used to know. He is the professor of archaeology in Jerusalem University, and he is very famous for soil conservation in Israel. So.
You made contact with him.
I made contact with him. He was one of them who did not go to England for some reason, although his sister, I think, was in England. And his sister then eventually married an Israeli who became a diplomat in Norway. But he left like very shortly after that also. So as far as, you know, my romantic life or anything like that, my
very
normal
development
sort of was always stagnated, but I didn't feel it that it did.
Did you take some courses at the university, or did you just audit?
Yeah.
You audited.
Just audited.
You were also, you had already learned the language.
Oh yeah, well I was in school, in nursing school,
in the
already
nursing
for
school,
a year.
Yes.
Okay, one nursing school here and one nursing school there. So I, that, and I got my, what they call, not a diploma, but after 18 months you get like a
certificate
and a cross, silver cross. You could wear out your uniform before.
Certifying that you were a nurse.
Certifying, yeah.
And how long did you stay in the insane asylum?
Well, now we are 45, and the war is over.
And you were still in the insane asylum?
And now the rumor starts going around that those who escaped from Denmark and they go back to Denmark now will become automatically Danish citizens.
I see.
And that was a big thing with me because I was citizen of nothing. I had no citizenship. You know, a human being consists of body, soul, and paperwork. If you don't
especially
have a paperwork,
in Europe,
especially
yes.
In Europe, and Sweden was very, very strict about these things.
So.
For all the immigrants now, this what was very difficult for me when I was cleaning the fish in the school. It took months before I got a permit from the police to be something else than a fish cleaner. You always had to stay within the profession. You had to have somebody to vouch for you, and I had no one to go like to nursing school. And it also took you police permit to move from one place to the other. So this is why you always stayed within your
balance,
whatever,
yes.
Your boundaries, your trade or whatnot, because it was practically impossible to climb. So now this thing comes that you can become a citizen if you return at a certain time, which I did. But I want to retract a little. The Czech family in Stockholm, which I mentioned, the husband who worked for the Czech government in exile, really took to me. They were really, really good to me, and through them I met like the Czech community there, was not necessarily all Jewish. Some of them escaped from the Nazis and so on, but there was a culture finally which I thought they used to give me tickets to go to concerts and they go to theater. Mm-hmm. I went first time to a museum in 100 years. And I was invited for dinner where the table was set the first time, you know. They gave me a present on my birthday or something like
Czech,
that. I sort of was eating all this up, and I think I was good for them too because they had no children and they felt they were doing something for me, but our friendship remained. I mean, they had a summer house. Mm-hmm. I used to go out there with them to their summer house, and they had a dog. I used to take the dog. Well, it was like a normal life,
yes.
A normal family
yes.
life. Yeah, I had
yes.
somewhere to go on a weekend. So, and this is really off the record. She made me this. This is still from her. At the Tea Cozy, and
you're still in touch.
Well, they're both dead now. He died in Sweden. She came to live with me. She dissolved the house in Sweden. Came to live with me. Went to visit somebody in Seattle, and met somebody and married there. And then she died shortly after that here. But she lived with me quite a while here. She was an author. She wrote several books, and through her I met other people in literature who were authors and musicians who were their friends. So it was nice.
Yes.
It was very nice.
Oh yes.
So the Emigree Society, of course, were all these artists and authors, the
intellectuals.
Elite. Yeah.
Yes. Had any of them known your parents?
No.
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 And you went back to Denmark.
I went back to Denmark, and now we were interned in Denmark again. We got to Denmark, been interned for 1 week again in a school and slept on the floor and so on. But the rumor wasn't true. We didn't get it.
You didn't get your
citizenship. And nobody knew who started the rumor.
Oh my.
Now we are 45. But I got a job pretty fast. I got a job in a restitution office. Which was very nice. It was the first time I took a course in typing, and I worked there and did a lot of translating and so on.
This was for applicants, Danish Jewish applicants for restitution.
Mm-hmm.
They're
called Zentralkontoret.
Mm-hmm. And so you were earning a little money.
I was earning money. I got myself a room with a Jewish family who had a retarded child, and I took care of the child.
This was in Copenhagen.
Now I'm in Copenhagen.
Finally,
yeah,
in the city.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, I'm eating it all up.
Oh yes.
It's 45. And I worked there, and in 1946, I decided to go back home. And that's the end of my story.
You heard nothing about the fate of your parents specifically?
Well, I went back home in 46.
To Prague.
To Prague. And my uncle, who was in Russia, he did survive. He came back, and at the time he made military his career. He became a real ardent communist. Is this off?
We can
turn it off. Because that's not on. And he has an interesting story too, which I find interesting. But during the whole course of the war, and I mean during the course in Sweden and all this, I really lost contact of all the Havarim, all after the war, all spread out. I was not, and I think, I don't know why, but I was the only one who sort of lost contact. Because I was in 43, the person who was supposed to contact me to escape didn't, and they all escaped in one group. And I never contacted them again until in the 70s.
They had no way of getting to you.
They
didn't
know where I was,
went
and
out
what
to
I
the
was.
Farms.
So in the 72, it's 10 years
yes.
ago when I contacted them again. I want to go to my uncle. The beginning I said my mother was out of 7, my father was out of 3. Nobody survived. Except my uncle and my aunt on my father's side, who married a Gentile who never let go of her. He was actually the first, he was the one who went before her because he didn't want to divorce her. They had a daughter whom they put into a convent who
survived.
I'm in touch with her. My aunt and uncle on my father's side, they came both back, but he contracted bone tuberculosis. And he died not long after
the
liberation.
Theresienstadt.
He was in a work camp. She was in a Theresienstadt. And she lived until she was a young woman. Young woman now. She was my age.
Yeah.
But she died in the 60s. My uncle, who was the youngest of the seven children, he was the only boy. He came back from Russia. He made military his career. Ardent communist, had a marvelous life. He had a pheasant under the glass and the caviar on the table. In 1966, he is a general now, and he is a specialist in strategic command, whatever that means.
In Czechoslovakia.
In Czechoslovakia. He also lectures at the military academy. He's a professor at the military
academy.
Do you
hear
academy.
From him?
Yes.
You do.
Oh, yeah. At that time, I didn't. I did hear from him through a contact, but he would never write directly to me.
Mm-hmm.
In 1946, when I came back, because he had the military uniform, and that means a lot in Europe to run around with a military uniform. He could rescue little things which my parents hid with the Gentile people, and thus I had that.
I see.
And the letters, and
there, the apartment was still pretty much intact.
The apartment was intact, but they wouldn't let me in when I saw it.
They wouldn't let you in.
And I stayed in Czechoslovakia for 1 year.
Where did you live?
I lived with my aunt. And with my cousin. And I went to the university. I passed an exam, and I went to Charles University.
How was life there for Jews in 46, 47? Of course, there were so few Jews.
There were so few Jews, and it was irrelevant. It was...
The communists had not yet taken over, had they?
No. Well, you see, I was there while the communists took place, so then I went back to Denmark again.
I see. But in 46, it was still...
Yeah, but... 46, and but then the communists took over while I was there.
47, 48.
Yeah. And I went back
to
Denmark.
How was life at the university while you were there?
It was fine. With the professor who lectured also lived in Denmark for a while. And
you found some friends?
I found some friends. I lived with my aunt, and I was really busy trying to find some contact about the survived people. I was running to Theresienstadt. I took the train, I took the bus, running to Theresienstadt. Look at that. And
what did you major?
I wanted to get some kind of a death certificate. I wanted to do something with some insurance and all these paper things. And my uncle was quite helpful in that.
He was already leaning toward... communist.
Oh, he was
a committed
leaning.
Communist.
He was an absolutely committed communist. 1966, this is my uncle's story, not mine. He gets a call from the military headquarters In 24 hours, he is going to Cairo to teach the Egyptian tactics against the Jews in Israel. Okay, he's going to teach them. Well, it wasn't spelled out that way, but that's the way he told it to me later. Now, all these years, nobody knew he was Jewish. And he married a Gentile woman, and he didn't want to have that much with it to do either. He was 15, I think, when he left, when the war started, and he walked all the way through Poland, walked all the way to Russia, all by foot. It took him a couple of years. And it really didn't mean that much. Communism was his religion.
Didn't have any feeling about
it. Didn't have any feeling about it. But
state.
Yet when I was home, I went to see my rabbi from way back who married my parents and all this, who survived the concentration camp. He was at that time blind, was in his 80s, but he did survive. And my uncle took me to see him. But that's about it. He did not have any, at least overtly, he never
expressed
any feeling that communism took over.
Well, he was just a child when he left.
And, but I was in a Zionistic atmosphere and Jewish atmosphere, so for me it was different. So 1966, he gets a call that he has to go to Egypt. And they knew that they're going to proclaim a war against Islam. And he's going to instruct the Egyptian army, whatever. And suddenly, the wheel started going in his head. And that's what he told me. He says, what am I going to do? Slaughter my people again who have been slaughtered? Am I going to be responsible? But I'm a military man. You know, even in this army, you don't say no, you can. But I'm not going to admit that I'm Jewish. Mm. And he said that he encountered a tremendous, really did not know what to do. He couldn't say no. And he knew that he cannot teach wrong. And of course he says, I wrote my lectures the other way around or something, you know, not to teach, stalling it and so on. And see how fate does catch up with you, right? How your background catches up with you on the most unexpected circumstances, right?
He did go to Cairo.
No.
He didn't.
The interesting part of it is that neither the Russians nor the Czech army ever dug into his background. The Arabs did. The Egyptians did.
How ironic.
They went to the town where he was born, same time I was born. They went to interview the people who were the neighbors, and they were told that they never came back after the war. They never got any really proof. That's my uncle saying, although I think they must have, because if they got into the records, to the Jewish community records, which were kept, they must have found his birth certificate. Because he never changed his name. My mother's maiden name was not typically
Jewish,
like Jewish, so European, could have been anything,
yeah.
Okay? Neither was mom, really, maiden name was not Jewish, really Jewish either, could be anything. So it was not like, you know, something which you know, it's definitely Jew. And like 2 days, 48 hours, he told me, before he was called, they was called in the headquarters again. And they said they are sending somebody else, which was one of his brilliant students they were sending.
How ironic.
So he got off the hook that way. But he was saying, you know, if the Arabs didn't, I would have to go to war against
Israel.
But he never became, I mean, after that, even that experience didn't teach him that he's going to
change the course of his life.
No. He is still alive. He's only a couple of years older than I am.
What he has watched the communists do to Jewish life, one wonders.
Doesn't face him. It does not face him. He's retired, a retired general. He's retired as a professor of strategic command. And the military academy in Brno sends the people from Cuba come there to study, people from El Salvador, all these South American countries, they come and study the guerrilla warfare there.
Yes.
And he's like, turn that. You know, El Salvador is another thing. I think we are wrong too. But he's retired now, and what he gets retirement from both places. What he does, he takes tours. He's like becomes a tour guide into Russia. He takes people who go. So he's very much thought on Russia.
A good life, in quotation marks.
Yeah, he does for a good life.
Now, what did you feel in 47 that made you return to Denmark? What was happening?
Well, okay, first of all, I didn't think that I really... When I got there, I wanted to leave the same day. There was, if it weren't for my aunt who was there and my uncle who was there, I felt nothing. I didn't feel I belonged. I just didn't feel I didn't. I went to the house we lived in. I went to the school I went in. I went to the shul. I felt that's not me. That's not for me. This is not my life.
Ghosts.
But I don't know what my life is. I don't know what my life is. But I know this is not it. Because I feel worse being a stranger here than being a stranger in a strange land, or in Denmark, or in Sweden, which I knew. But it is a stranger feeling to be a stranger at home than be a stranger in a strange place. And I felt I want to get this degree because the education was free, number one. Number two, I still had all these ends to tie. Number three, I wanted to spend some time with my relatives, the few. And I think the main thing was that I wanted to get a degree.
And you did get it.
Yeah. And
so you left in 47?
Yeah, I left in 47, went back to Denmark.
And what did you
do? Yeah, the thing was this, yeah, why I did this was that, you see, because I was not a citizen, right? When I didn't have a passport, I had the Nansen pass, the stateless passport, which was...
Didn't you get your Czech citizenship back, or didn't you want it?
I didn't even, you see, I never... The passport I immigrated on, the piece of paper which the Nazi gave us was a Jewish passport, right?
Yes.
I went to Czechoslovakia on a Danish stateless passport. Which I would have become no citizen at all if I didn't return within 6 months. But I went to the Czech and the Danish embassy and got it renewed for another 6 months. So, and by the time I knew I'm not going to stay. I never, never wanted to become a Czech citizen ever again. Also, everything was very shabby. The communists were creeping in. Everybody was the same thing like under the Nazi. Everybody was afraid of everybody. Everybody was whispering under the table. Everything was done very secretly.
Right.
The tension and the fear, you could sweat it. You could smell it again. You could feel it. And I lived in a different land. I knew, and also the consumer goods, which I'm not a materialistic person at all, but I could have had it if I had the money. It was there, it was available, it was for me to see in the shop windows, and there it was, and everybody was very drab. But I think the smell of the fear was worse than anything else. And I never, my aunt and my uncle, they wanted me to stay there. Because
you were the last of the family.
Yeah, but they had the daughter, Eva, who still I'm in contact with.
She's still in Czechoslovakia?
Mm-hmm. Well, she's a very devout Catholic because she was raised in a convent and she retained. And of course it was a mixed marriage to begin with. So, but she was a devout Catholic, now she is a devout communist.
So you returned to Denmark?
So I returned to Denmark and I got extremely ill. I was very sick. I was sick for 3 months.
Who took care of you?
Hospital.
Too many shocks, too much. was a breakdown, I suppose.
No, no, it was a physical. Physical sick. No, I'm pretty strong.
Of course you are.
And it's funny, I shouldn't say that. But,
did you?
I went back to Sweden.
You couldn't find a place for yourself.
No, first of all, the housing was, I couldn't find a room, I couldn't find a job. I was sick for 3 months. I had poisoning, blood poisoning all over my body. And, God. I woke up one day and I thought I took the streetcar to the hospital and I said, well, anyhow. So that was that. And I finally got a room near this train station, and I think I'm naive, now I'm 22, almost 22.
This naive. Is now in Sweden.
No, that's in Denmark still.
Denmark.
When I return to Denmark from Czechoslovakia, I get this room. Six before I went to Czechoslovakia. I'm in Copenhagen. And they think an American big vessel is coming. Well, you know, for us, the American was next to God, next to angel. And we ran to the Lange Linie to see this big American ship coming in, American Navy. Just the naivety of standing there, a pier, and the ship comes in, and everybody just, it's after the war, but still, it was quite something, you know, to see the Americans who liberated all these people throughout the war. And I'm standing there, and suddenly this sailor comes, two sailors come in and grab me on the beach side. I did not know what they wanted from me. I found out the hard way. I was so naive. Could you believe that? All this I went through, I mean, as that field, I was the
still
most naive person.
Innocent, yes.
Well, anyhow, so I found out soon enough that, you know, where I rented the room from, on the floor above. And I wrote to these Czech people in Sweden that I really would like to go back to Sweden.
They have remained in Sweden.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And I went back to Sweden, and I got a very nice job. And I got an apartment. And I worked for Aktiebolaget Gas Akkumulator, which was Mr. Nobel's firm.
The Nobel of the Nobel Peace Prize.
And Peace Prize, who got the, you know, he invented the dynamite.
The dynamite,
right?
Yes.
It's also a very interesting thing that he's giving Peace Prize. And I worked there as a translator, interpreter in the office for the, it was an engineering firm, and they did a lot of engineering.
Well, finally you had a job that was really commensurate with
and
your talents.
It was very nice. I really liked that. I made friends. I started to go to school to learn English.
This was now your ninth language, I suppose.
However, in 1940, you see, my parents my grandmother had a stepsister in Cincinnati, Ohio. And when this whole thing, Holocaust, broke out, everybody was trying to find a relative who would send you an affidavit. And they commit hold, and when they finally decided they were going to do it, it was much, 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 much too late. But in 1945, after the war finished, I went to the American embassy, and I said whether this would be good for me. It was not for me, but since I think that I'm the sole survivor, whether that would reflect upon me. And thus I went to Czechoslovakia in 46 and got all these mass death certificates to present to the American embassy that yes, they are not alive. And thus the affidavit would come to me. And because I was on a Czech quota living in Sweden, it took to 1950 before I came here. In the meantime, though, I was working in the gas accumulator, and when the affidavit finally came, I didn't want to go, because I really did.
You wanted to stay in Sweden?
I had a good life, I have good friends, I had this family. I belonged now to some hiking club, and all this and that. And I toured, and also I had to start saving money to go to this big Atlantic trip, right? Yeah. Over the Atlantic Ocean. And then I finally decided, I learned more English, and worst comes to worst, I still am no citizen of no country, which meant, I have to return within 6 months. If I don't like it now, I have to have money for two trips
back and forth.
And I came in and I never returned. I stayed.
Whom did you contact? Your relatives in Cincinnati, Hannah?
Yeah, I went to Cincinnati. I went to New York, and as a matter of fact, I also found out that my aunt had a sister-in-law in Jackson Heights, New York, and I stayed there 2 days or something, and then I had to go. At the time it was different than it's now. You had to go to the town or the city where your sponsor came from.
I see.
So I went to Cincinnati, Ohio. And nobody told me that America is so big, even if you see it on the map. So I get on the train in New York and think 3 hours later I'm going to be in Cincinnati. So I was in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Did you get a cordial reception?
Well, that was another thing. You see, while I was in Sweden, I got in contact with this family while. And they had a son by name Joe. And they wrote me in German that if I marry Joe, performer, that I can come to America immediately. Well, I didn't want to do that. I my life was not in jeopardy. So I said, wait my turn, takes another year. And then I really wasn't that eager. But when I get to Cincinnati, they wanted me to marry Joe for real, you see. And I made quite a few boo-boo, but that doesn't belong to that. I'll give you a knife, how awesome. See, I usually don't smoke anymore.
Sweden. A few words about the American experience.
In Sweden, I saved enough money that I decided if I'm leaving Europe, I want to see France and England, because I worked in this firm. And I got very good friends. They still in touch with the people I worked with. And so I was in France for a couple of weeks in England, and then I went on Queen Elizabeth II to America. You can edit this if you want.
I would like to know how you made your way once.
Okay, so
you had
then,
to support yourself.
Now I come to these people and I said to them, I have this package to deliver to these people, and they said, you are not going there. And I says, why not? I want to call them. They said, no, you are not calling them. I says, what not? And they said, well, they are niggers. Okay, you are not going to do this. And I says, why not? You do not understand. I'm very smart. Yes, I understand. If somebody finds out, I said, no. It was like this. I asked him to come and pick it up, And he is telling me he can't. He can't come. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I says, why not? He says, I just can't. So I tell my relatives, and says, I'm going there to deliberate how to get there. And they say, I can't to go there. Okay? I'm still figuring out anything. I can't figure this thing out. So then finally he says, oh, they're niggas. So I says, so what? You know, you can do this. So I decided that I'm going to meet this man who was the brother of this man. And they're sending Joe, their son, to chaperone me. Mm-hmm. And chaperones me, and I get off the bus, and he's the bus with me, and in front of the man, he slaps me in the face, mm-hmm. Joe, and he says, I don't want you to be a nigger lover in front of him. And I...
This was your introduction.
Stubborn! And I go with this black young man, he just wanted to disappear. I says, oh no, with my broken English, we are going to have a cup of coffee somewhere. And there was nowhere to go and have a cup of coffee. And he called me, this black man, and invited me to his house. And I said that to my relatives, and I came back, and my suitcase was in front of the door, and they said they don't want to see me anymore because the house is going to be burnt down. And that was... I was here 2 months. I thought I was such a smart aleck, you know.
That was your introduction to America.
Mm-hmm.
Then you went back east to New York. You stayed in Cincinnati.
I was looking for a job, you know. And then, in the meantime, I met a girl from Denmark, a Jewish girl from Denmark who had some relatives there. And I said to her, yeah, and, oh yeah, and I got a room. $5 a week. I shared a bed. And I was looking for a job, and since I had a nursing degree, I was looking for Red Cross. And the first thing I see in the paper is Blue Cross. I said, Blue Cross, Red Cross, same thing. I go and apply to Blue Cross for a job, and it was a file clerk. And I got the job, and I stayed there. And then for a while, and then I got a job in a speech and hearing clinic. And then I decided that I hated Cincinnati with a passion. In the meantime, I met my future husband, which is another story. But and he was engaged to somebody else, and which I did not know. And I didn't like it. I probably wouldn't have liked it anywhere after coming from Sweden. I hated the heat. I just could not stand the heat. The air conditioning didn't exist at the time. Didn't have air conditioning. This is 50. And all I knew about America, what I read, but I always was sort of fascinated by San Francisco. And I saved him my money. I bought my one-way ticket and went to San Francisco. I stopped by in Colorado. I fell in love with Denver. I got a... went to the Jewish hospital, got a job in the Jewish hospital in Denver, Colorado. I'm staying at the Y for $2 a night. Remember that? Alone. And the day I was supposed to start the job, I called them up and I said, you know, I still want to go to San Francisco. And I went to San Francisco. I stayed there for 2 years. Worked in a hospital.
That must have been lovely.
And the man whom I met in Cincinnati came to San Francisco to propose because his engagement was over. And I said, only under one condition, that we come to San Francisco. I never did. Never did again. That's fate. So I worked in San Francisco. At that time I was getting $50 and Cincinnati I was getting $35 a week. It was a fortune.
Sure.
$5 a week was my room. I saved in 3 months to go by train. I went to this California Zephyr by train. Oh boy, oh my God, I'm in such a country.
Yes.
Stayed in Salt Lake City.
You saw the country.
Today the youngsters, they just buy a car and they go.
But in those days that was an adventure.
Yeah.
Thank you so very much.
I don't know.
This was an extraordinary saga, yes. Oh, there's much of value and of interest that will be important, especially for younger people. Thank you very much.